in this episode's description, you will notice a link that will take you to Sideshow.com, where they are celebrating Star Trek, the original series, by way of the Quantum Mechanics Master Series Star Trek, the original series figure. And another original bridge crew member with the Enterprise's engineering miracle worker, Lieutenant Commander Montgomery Scott, more commonly known as Scotty. Take a look at our description. Click on that link. It helps.
Warning, Star Trek From the Holodeck contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Lock it alone!
Fire!
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Commander Klingon vessel, we are energizing transporter beam. Now!
Welcome to Star Trek From the Holodeck. I am Michael Flores, the host and the captain, sitting in the captain's seat. And to my right is my counselor.
Communications is open, Captain.
No, not communications. You're a counselor today. You have changing jobs all the time. Okay? You're
Does
a fill-in.
I'm a
you
telepath
just, you
now?
Just, yeah, you're a telepath.
Sweet. I'm gonna telepath all those pictures of...
I don't think you know how telepathy works. All right. So today we're going to be talking about a lot of Star Trek news because there is a lot of stuff going on. First bit of news, Dave, that we need to get into, and it really gets under my skin. Chris Hemsworth opens up about the Star Trek IV debacle and why he left Star Trek IV. Now, there were a lot of rumors, Dave, alluding to the fact that Chris Pine and Chris Hemsworth wanted a bigger salary. In order to be included in the next movie, they needed their needs met. And their need was, quite simply, more money. And I understand, as actors progress, they get more jobs under their belt, they become bigger box office draws, they deserve more money, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And it's understandable.
It's understandable. However, Chris Hemsworth isn't really a box office draw. He has one franchise called Marvel that he continues to do. Every other movie this man's done has not done very well. It's not resonated with the audience. He doesn't really equate box office dollars or box office revenue.
Yeah, he's tried to break out on his own, especially with like movies. I remember that one computer thriller.
Yeah, Black Hat.
Black Hat.
Yeah.
And he tried
to break out. He's allegedly a computer genius. Yeah, I believe that. Chris Hemsworth, computer genius. Right. Right. That was problem number one with that movie.
That's as bad as me thinking Guinan lap dancer.
Yes, perfect comparison. Yeah, so Chris Hemsworth says he left Star Trek IV over a bad script. Not money. According to The Hollywood Reporter, the dispute involved Paramount's insistence on the crisis taking a significantly reduced page on the crisis. Oh, the Chris. That's not how you spell Chris's.
What the hell?
According to Hollywood Reporter, the dispute involved Paramount's insistence on the Chris's taking a significantly reduced paycheck. But Hemsworth recently told Variety he turned down the chance to come back to J.J. Abrams' Star Trek universe because the script wasn't quite right. I don't feel like we landed on a reason to revisit that yet, he said. I didn't want to be underwhelmed by what I was going to bring to the table. Does he forget that he was on the red carpet talking about coming back to Star Trek IV and that he liked the ideas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I was like.
Listen, dude.
Didn't you just say in an interview you were excited to come back?
Yeah, he's trying to save face, Dave, forgetting what he said before. The simple fact is the guy wanted more money.
Yeah.
And as I said, he's just not worth it. If he's being cast in a Marvel movie, then maybe he's worth the money he wants. But the guy, Dave, even his own movies, Thor 1 and 2, didn't even make that much money in the box office. They were box office failures in the grand scheme of thing. When you compare it to all the other Marvel movies, they didn't do very well.
No.
It wasn't until Ragnarok, when they threw out the template and decided to make an action buddy comedy, did his actual movie actually make money on its own.
Yes.
Everything else he's done as a group in Avengers. So he can't really dictate his paycheck based on his successes on a franchise that doesn't rest solely on his shoulders.
And look, he's going on to Guardians of the Galaxy, another ensemble piece.
Yeah, it isn't that him.
Is an entire cast.
Yeah, nobody was rushing out to see, you know, any movie he's done, especially Black Hat.
It's very – I don't know why, but people are just – afraid nowadays just to actually say, hey, I don't want to do this because you're not paying me enough.
And you know what? I would have respected that more. And
I would have respected that a lot.
And I probably wouldn't have been a douche like I'm being right now. Like,
but it's not being a that's the thing, is like, people think that it's being a douche, but no, it's not. You're there. You want to get the most out of your career.
Yes.
And if you want the most money, fine. Just tell people that you're not making enough money.
And that, you know what? I would have respected that. If he said, hey, you know what? I really wanted to do it, but, you know, with my schedule, it's filling up. You guys all know what I'm doing with Marvel. And for me to take a break from that, I would have to have a significant paycheck for me to want to go do that at this time.
Yeah.
Just because I would be taking a hit because I have these films already scheduled. If he would have said it like that, I would be like, hey, dude, the guy was truthful. And you know what? Logically, dude, it makes sense. This is a job. We're not playing games here. You're not playing dress up. You're not cosplaying. This is your career. I get it. But no, he makes up this elaborate lie. I mean, are they even going to want him in these movies now? Let's say they get this movie off the ground. Do they even want him at this point?
Yeah.
I mean, bashing the script that was written by Simon Pegg, who, by the way, did a damn fucking good job with Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah.
The problem with that movie was not the script. It was some of the subpar visual effects in that film.
It was the effects and how the production house treated it, honestly, because it's like one of those things where – if it was given its rightful due, Star Trek Beyond would have actually done much better.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was way better than Into Darkness, because I totally dug the 2009 original J.J. Abrams reboot. Into Darkness wasn't terrible, but there was it was littered with some bad decisions. And ultimately, I feel like it marred that movie for me.
But then get to Beyond, which actually felt like an actual Star Trek episode.
It felt like a classic episode of Star Trek,
yes,
the original series, and that's why I really dug it. Obviously, Star Trek has some issues. The movies have issues of late. My biggest thing is they have a villain problem. You know,
yeah,
the original movies were filled with these characters that were dim reflections of our heroes. The villains were dim reflections of our heroes, and that's what made them so interesting. That's what made them so
palatable?
No, that's what made them such a threat to our heroes.
Yes.
Because in a lot of ways, their enemy was themselves. That's why they always worked. I'm not saying that was the template for every single movie, but some of the greatest Star Trek films and villains, that's what they did.
Yeah.
And with these new movies, they never really quite committed to creating a true Shakespearean villain. They didn't give us a villain that was making a statement about our heroes.
Yes. And they had a chance with Beyond. The villain in Beyond, I thought, was...
it was okay.
But it could have been better.
Yeah, they could have worked harder to really make that character's motivation stand out and work in a way that would actually push and propel the story of Kirk.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest problem. It's just kind of like, I want to say circumstances and obstacles for obstacles' sake. They're not creating obstacles that actually help tell a parallel narrative with the rest of our characters.
Yeah, because look at the three villains that you had to deal with. The first one was Nero, which for me, I liked Nero, there was so much potential that you could have had with him.
Yeah, the movie in itself worked great.
Yes.
And Nero wasn't a bad villain per se, but they could have done
a lot more.
A lot more.
Then you get to Khan, which, you know, Star Trek Into Darkness, I didn't mind Khan in Star Trek Into Darkness because, like...
No, I didn't mind him either, but it wasn't... It didn't mean anything.
That's
the problem. Like, Khan meant something in the original series and what he represented. And then you take that character and you put him into the actual film, Star Trek II, it meant something again. It was also the catalyst for so many additional problems that would plague our crew for the next four movies.
And then you have Idris Elba's character in Star Trek Beyond, which there was so much potential you could have had with his character, but they decided to play it safe.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to actually push too much on that side because you kind of got a feeling that they were trying to make an anti-hero out of him. And
yeah, well, they're trying to give him create sympathy for him and understanding. Him. But yeah. It's just like, dude, you're annihilating people with essentially chemical or biological warfare. Weapons. That's not cool, bro. Like Khan, we kind of understood. I mean, from Star Trek II, like we kind of understood Khan's
motives.
And I think that's the biggest problem with these new movies. Again, I enjoy them, but that to me is one of the biggest problems. They just don't represent much. They have to represent something. They don't. Sometimes the villain just simply represents the tangible obstacle that our heroes have to overcome. They don't have to always be something of greater importance. And they can just be a representation of something. And that's why the Borg works so well in Star Trek mm-hmm. First Contact. And that's why even I forgot their names now, but the villains in Insurrection. I went back and watched Insurrection, a movie that I used to not really care about. And I'm like, oh, my God, the philosophy runs so deep in this film. I can't believe I hated this when it came out. I watched it less than a year ago, 6 months ago, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. So that's the biggest problem with these Kelvin movies is that it doesn't say anything. There isn't a lot of substance behind these obstacles.
And the thing was, everyone, going back to Chris Hemsworth, from what we understood, the next movie was actually something that was going to affect the characters in the Star Trek. It was going to deal with Kirk and his relationship with his father.
Right.
Which sounded fantastic.
Yeah, because that's really what I feel like Star Trek Beyond was the tip of the iceberg. Into Darkness kind of took a step back, but Beyond kind of continued the inner issues of this new young Kirk. Mm-hmm. And I loved what they were starting with the original 2009 reboot. And then, of course, Beyond, making this statement about living under the shadow of their perceived future. I mean, imagine if you knew what greatness you're supposed to accomplish. And you could see that when Spock interacts with older Spock or Spock Prime. There's a sense of respect for who this man is. In a way, it's not even him. So he has this respect. And at the same time, there's this shadow that just looms over you because you know what your future's supposed to be.
Yes.
And then Kirk dealing with the fact that he knows this wasn't his future, that his father wasn't supposed to die. They were making a lot of those statements. They weren't overtly stated, but the subtext was there. And that's why when I heard the idea for Star Trek IV and what Simon Pegg was doing with bringing back George Kirk, I felt like this is it. I'm like, this is great. I'm not a fan of time travel and bringing people back to life, but if it means something, if the core of the story is about our character's emotional state and what it means for their growth and moving forward in their life, then I'm all for it. And I felt like this was going to be the step in the right direction. It was going to continue the emotional narratives that we started in the 2009 reboot. And now we'll never know. I don't think we're ever going to see that. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, you know, Zachary Quinto is, in fact, still holding out hope to play Spock again.
Yeah, God bless Zachary Quinto.
Yeah, yes, I know. He's always doing press for it. And that's what's amazing about this man, because no matter what project he's talking about, it can be a TV show he's going to be working on. It can be a book, whatever. Guess what always happens? He brings up Star Trek. He brings it up because it's the project that, yes, Heroes launched him, but I feel like Star Trek really gave him that mainstream appeal, mainstream name.
I agree with that. That was the one that basically made him a mainstream audience actor.
Yeah, the recognizable household name. Absolutely. So I like that he champions Star Trek, but I hope Zachary Quinto is like, you fucking piece of shit, Chris Hemsworth.
Chris and Simon, Pine, what is wrong with you?
Not even Chris Pine. Like, I'm okay with him for the most part, but like the fact that Chris Hemsworth bashes the script, you know, getting back to that for a second here. I mean, Simon Pegg is a good writer. Imagine how that just made him feel. I'm like, you son of a bitch. You know it's not the fucking script. It's your great Chris Hemsworth.
Now we'll just get your brother. How's that? We'll get the other Hemsworth.
Oh, that would be funny if that they did that. That would be
hilarious. But, you know, I'm not a spiteful person, but if I was a producer, I'd say, okay, Chris, we understand. You're asking a lot.
Hey, Liam, we need you to.
Liam,
you know what?
Are you doing something?
Your wife's hotter than Chris's. I mean, you're dating Miley Cyrus or married to Miley Cyrus. Hey, you know what? Come on.
You look like your brother. Come on.
All right. We'll forget about that shitty Independence Day sequel you did. Never mind. No harm, no foul. How about you play George Kirk?
How are we going to explain it? Time travel.
Yeah, it distorted my face. Maybe not as good looking.
As much. You know, we still got you right there.
Yeah. All right. So Star Trek found new life on the big screen when J.J. Abrams brought the franchise back with a new timeline in 2009. That film's success spawned a pair of sequels, and we were expecting a fourth film to come along in a short order. However, the most recent word is that the film is not currently an active concern for the studio. Having said that, Zachary Quinto certainly hopes that he gets a chance to play Spock again at some point. When recently asked by Vulture about the status of Star Trek IV, not to be confused with The Voyage Home, Zachary Quinto stated that he had no idea what the plan for the franchise was at this point, though he made it clear that he certainly wants a fourth movie to happen, saying, "I don't know what's happening with that, and I'm trying to figure out what, if anything, will be the future for it. I feel glad that the franchise is having its own life continuing on with Star Trek Discovery, and my hope is that we'll also get to go back and play those roles again, but there's no telling right now if it will happen or not." That sucks, dude.
It sucks.
I mean, yeah, it does. It does suck. Especially with the rumor that Tarantino would have directed the fifth one.
Yes.
I was really hoping we got there. I was really, really hoping we got there. And maybe Tarantino will still direct, because that was going to be his next movie after the one that's coming out this summer, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. His next project was going to be immediately jumping into Star Trek V.
Yeah.
Now, at this point, who knows? Maybe we may bypass the idea for Star Trek IV and do something entirely new that will be directed by Tarantino. And I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with it, too, because especially since now Star Trek does seem to have some kind of direction under Alex Kurtzman. Like, Kurtzman's plan seems to actually have some semblance of direction.
He has a strategy.
So that's why I was okay with them saying, okay, we're going to put movies on hold. Let's focus on the streaming series is first, get Picard out there, get Discovery rolling, get Section 31 rolling, get all that stuff rolling. And I feel that Kurtzman will come with a movie. It wouldn't make sense if that's not in his plans.
Well, right now he can't, because he's in charge of the TV universe right now.
Right now.
And because of money issues and contractual obligations, or contractual reasons, I should say, Paramount and CBS are completely separate at this point when it comes to the ownership of movies and television. Paramount has the movie rights and CBS has the television rights. So right now, we can't really cross the streams at this moment. Now, Alex Kurtzman was the executive producer behind all three of the Kelvin timeline movies. So yes, he can jump ship if he wants and tries it and try to tell a movie that connects to his world. But the TV elements, I don't think can actually fit into the movies as of yet. You can allude to them, obviously, because there is within those contracts, there is a canon between movies and TV, But it's only a matter of time as well. As I have said numerous times on this show, Dave, Viacom and CBS are probably going to merge any day. And once they merge, Paramount and CBS will become a single company again, mm-hmm. thereby bringing both the movie and the TV fronts together again. And then these problems won't be an issue. And perhaps we'll see Alex Kurtzman say, hey, you know what? This is the plan for the movie. We're going to do this. Maybe he'll have more freedom. Right?
Yeah. That's how I feel that it's almost like watching a chess match. Yeah. We're waiting for the next move. And I think the next big move is just like what you said, is that supposed merger. Because everyone in the industry knows it's going to happen sooner or later. And a lot of news and a lot of rumors is pointing it to happening sooner, that it's going to happen any time. So once that happens, that opens the gates for Alex Kurtzman to all of a sudden take a step back and say, all right, now I have this avenue. What can I do with it? All right, let's go back, and I want to make Star Trek one whole universe again. Which is something that he, in past interviews, when he took over, he said he was going to try to make those answers clear, because it's been connect the dots. He wanted to give Star Trek fans closure's not the right word, but that connection.
Yeah.
He wanted to give them that connected universe to make the Star Trek universe feel whole again.
Yeah. All right, Dave. So let's switch gears here. Let's talk Star Trek Picard. Okay.
Just around the corner.
Just around the corner. And it's no secret that you and I are very, very excited, along with the rest of the world. Giddy. We all have boners. And we're not ashamed of it. We're not ashamed to reveal ourselves as well with that boner. Are we, David?
No.
Yeah. Phasers. Set phasers to full effect, ladies. All right. After months of rumors, speculation, and a mounted of hype, according to this blog here, we got this covered. Concrete details for Star Trek Picard have finally begun to surface. Now, this was a rumor, as I said, Dave, and the rumor has now been pulled off from the site.
Yeah,
I don't know if they got in trouble or it proved false. We're not sure. But the rumor suggested that Brent Spiner will, in fact, make an appearance in Star Trek Picard. CBS released the first official trailer for Picard, which showed a much older and decidedly more experienced Sean Luke, who has seemingly turned in the life of commanding a Starfleet ship for a quiet retirement at his family's vineyard. All right, so while fans already got a glimpse at a newly released poster, there's not a ton to go off at this point. A few observant devotees have linked the show to the Kelvin timeline. Yes, we've done that.
Mm-hmm.
As reported by Matt Viernier of Revenge of the Fans, it looks like Brent Spiner will be making a guest appearance in Star Trek Picard. Series enthusiasts are, of course, familiar with the man behind Data, the Soong-type android who served as lieutenant commander aboard the USS Enterprise-D. Well, first off, Data can't be in this because he died. It would be his other brother before. But the way Nemesis ended, it kind of gave you the idea that it was Data's mind that merged with him.
Yes.
Because he started, humming the same song Data used to?
Yeah, he downloaded his memories and everything, apparently, into his brother.
Yes.
Into B4. And then, it ends on that cliffhanger where he's singing for Xhaka.
I can't stand when people write articles that don't know anything about what they're writing. Okay, so this is what this paragraph says. The next one.
Okay.
While it's easy to assume Spiner will be reprising his role as Sean Luke's trusted advisor, first off, he was not an advisor ever. Was he an advisor ever?
Ever.
Maybe a protege of sorts.
Yeah, would actually say he was definitely Picard's protege. Yeah.
So he was never a trusted advisor. And secondly, Data died.
Yeah, I was like going, you haven't seen Star Trek Nemesis, have you?
The character's dead. So it's not easy to assume anything.
Yeah.
We don't have any specifics. Well, obviously, you don't even have specifics on the details of Star Trek canon, motherfuckers. This is why blogs are the blight of my life.
Yes.
Now, that being said, it doesn't mean that the rumor that Brent Spiner would make an appearance could, in fact, prove true.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that there's always, there seems to be a lot of truth to these rumors. Sometimes the rumors are very wrong, but you can usually see once we find things out, like, oh, okay, well, now I understand how they got from A to Z.
Yes.
They missed, you know, everything else, but like, okay, it makes sense. And also it would make sense, Dave, and this brings me to a question that I have for you, Dave.
Okay.
And we got into this a little bit during our previous discussion, but, you know, let's say Brent Spiner does show up.
Yeah.
I would be fine with that.
No, but I'd be fine.
Would you be okay with, do you want to see, and not as a fan, Dave, but as a television critic, okay, do you want to see familiar faces? Do you want to see TNG, former TNG cast?
Only if it makes sense for the narrative. And with, since from what we know, this is supposed to be about Picard's life.
Right.
Right? Life after Starfleet. And apparently they're trying to search the reason why he left Starfleet. So it would, to me, it would make sense that, okay, we would see familiar faces because people are going to be asking, you know, why did Jean-Luc leave? Because if Jean-Luc has not said why he's left for 15 years and you can't get it out of him, the best thing you can do is go to people in his past and ask what happened to him, because he's not saying. So it would make sense. That's the if they do that as the narrative, and that explains why they show up, I'm fine with it. If it's just like, hi, it's Data today, and I just walked past the shot, that's
hey,
it.
Look, there's Beverly Crusher. How you there's doing
Beverly
over
Crusher
there?
And everything else. Oh, look, yeah, she's supposed to be here, remember?
Hi, how you doing, Guinan? Oh.
Yeah, and stuff like that. Then, no, don't do that.
Yeah, you know, Guinan, Whoopi Goldberg is making, is petitioning to return as well, right?
Yes.
Now, Dave, she's a fabulous character.
Yes, in
TNG.
She is.
I'm not a big fan of Whoopi Goldberg necessarily, but her role, she was the advisor. She yes. was Picard's advisor. Guinan not even, was his, not even his Deanna advisor. Troi, the obvious.
It was more or less Guinan. For me, when I think of advisor, I think Guinan and Beverly. Because Beverly was the person that he always confided
in. Oh, he kept those ladies close.
Yeah, he kept those ladies close.
Yeah.
And Guinan, I could actually picture, the only problem with Guinan that I figure is she's supposed to be stuck in the Nexus, though.
No.
Isn't she?
No, Dave, come on. What are you the guy that wrote this blog? Do you work for WeGotThisCovered.com?
WeGotThisCovered.com. What is this? D-Sab?
Guinan was just like Picard and Kirk at this point. A part of them.
A part of them, that's right.
I take that back. Kirk is in the Nexus.
Yes.
Then he comes out. Let me think how this works. Hold on. So a part of him is also in the Nexus. You're always there. Once you enter the Nexus,
A part of you stays.
In fact, Guinan mentioned that she was ripped from it. It was a dream, she said. It felt good. It was something like if you can, if greatness and feeling good was tangible, that's what the Nexus
field
was, if I remember her words here. So no, Dave, she's not trapped in the Nexus. But Guinan, to me, it has always been such a great character in Next Generation. And mm-hmm. for me, going back and watching Generations, the movie, I was so pleased that they used her in that way in that film. It's one of the highlights of that movie, besides the obvious, having Captain Kirk in it as well. And it would make perfect sense for her to be in it.
Yeah, because you're dealing with actually, especially
You're dealing with some type of psychological trauma, right? Yes. Something happened to Picard.
And Guinan was the one that always kind of like helped Picard walk through that.
Through the rough patches.
Through the rough
patches. And give him real solid advice. Sometimes she was very straightforward, and that's why she was his advisor, someone that he would speak to, because she wasn't necessarily part of the crew, so the whole rank thing wasn't an issue. There was no, you know, running the risk that you're insulting your captain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it worked so well. So I feel like out of all the characters that should come back or might come back, she's definitely one of the side characters. I know she wasn't a major cast player, but I would be okay with her coming back, and it would make sense on so many levels.
Yeah, because narratively she fits into – that's where narratively in Picard's story, that's Guinan's territory.
Yeah.
That's why characters like that and Beverly and it, to some degree Data, because like Data and Picard kind of like fed off of each other through, even as the movies went along, you notice kind of like this bond that Picard had for Data.
Yeah.
And like it culminated in Data sacrificing himself to save Picard. And that's the character that I think that should come in. That's partly my reason why I feel, yeah, if I saw Brett Spiner, it makes sense. Other characters, not so much. I know a lot of people are saying, well, what about Riker? What about Troy? What about Worf? Picard had a close relationship with Worf. And I'm like going, but narratively, if you look at the character's history, Worf grew out of that relationship because he had to become the ambassador of the Klingon Empire at that point. And that's his character arc and his character arc and his character narrative veered away from Picard.
Yeah.
Same thing with Riker. Riker veered away from Picard and he became the captain of the Titan. If they don't make allusions to that, then I'm like going,
yeah,
that would be a big misstep as a Star Trek fan.
Yeah, we do need to have some connection. We can't pretend Next Generation never happened.
But don't make it like a cavalcade of stars suddenly showing up.
Yeah, we don't want to be a revolving door. Hey, Picard, how you doing? Been a while. Hello. Is there a Sean Luck Pickard here? Hello.
That's why I said, I mean, it would make more sense if like I have a gut feeling that while Picard's the main character, there's another main character that we're going to be introduced that's kind of like the investigator that's trying to figure out this mystery of Picard.
All right.
And I could see that character interacting with past characters and not uh-huh. Picard himself.
Yeah.
Because from the look of it, Picard basically just literally shunned everybody at the end of this. He left Starfleet. And people might think it's strange, but if you look at Picard's narrative, even in like even in TNG, he kind of ended up like that with it at the end of Best of Both Worlds. Where was he in the Best of Both Worlds, which was like pretty much in the same time frame as this? He was by himself, and the only people he ever interacted with was Geordi and Data. That was it.
Yeah.
And then like, so it would make sense that basically that no one really talks to Picard now and he's by himself. But if they actually introduce like an investigator type character that's following this trail, that character will actually interact with characters of Picard's past.
Yeah. Makes sense. All right. You know what, Dave, let's go take a very quick break. We're going to go to 10 forward briefly, get a few drinks, talk to Guinan, and then we'll be right back.
They have given you your answer, Captain. Weapons stations. Fire at will.
Hey, Star Trek fans, this is Michael Flores, the host of Star Trek From the Holodeck. You will notice if you look at your podcast app within the description section, every new show will be featuring a new Star Trek item that we will offer our listeners. And when you purchase through that link, you will help our show continue to be on the air. So keep your eyes open for those links. Thank you.
Free stuff is awesome, but free stuff that will spice up your bedroom is even better. Just go to adamandeve.com and select almost any one item for 50% off, and then we'll load on the free stuff. Just enter this very exclusive code, RAINMAN, at checkout, and you'll get 10 tantalizing free gifts, including a sexy item for him, a special toy for her,
ooh,
and a third item you'll both enjoy.
Ooh.
And 6 extra special bonus items that are sure to rev your engine, pique your curiosity, and even blow you away. Plus,
free
free shipping.
Always sent in discreet packaging. Go to adamandeve.com now. Get 50% off plus the 10 free gifts when you enter the exclusive offer code RAINMAN. Again, that's RAINMAN. Because without it,
no free stuff.
That's RAINMAN at adamandeve.com.
The Rain Man Show. The Rain Man.
Why do you have to take it to the level of photographs and like, hey, I know you don't want to see this, but this will strengthen our friendship with these horrifying images.
He sounded like he was interested.
Okay.
Did he?
How does I don't want to see any photos, Andrew, equate to me?
Please show me some photos, Andrew.
How does that happen?
It's like, you know how guys are hanging out and it's like, oh man, this tastes awful. Here, have a bite.
What?
Have you not?
Wait, guys, what?
Did you hear the pre-show?
Thing, one thing leads to another. Next thing you know,
fist up the ass.
So you know your dick's in the other guy's ass.
For more Rain Man, visit RainManShow.com.
All right, get more Star Trek from the holodeck each and every single month. Head over to patreon.com/RainManDigital and get more Star Trek discussions, ranging from different discussions on themes of Star Trek, ideology of Star Trek, and topic-driven discussions like the Maquis, Borg, Q, all things that we keep going on. They're continuous, ongoing discussions. So head over to patreon.com/RainManDigital and pledge $5 or more a month, and you help us keep the lights on in the studio, and you recharge our dilithium crystals. Thank you.
We are the Borg. Lower your shields and surrender your ships. We will add your biological and technological distinctiveness to our own. Your culture will adapt to service us. Resistance is futile.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Star Trek from the Holodeck. I am Michael Flores, your host. Hello, David. How are you?
Doing good.
Are you back from the bathroom?
Yes, I cleaned myself up properly, Commander. All
right, good, perfect. Did you transport that shit into space? That's horrible. All right, so I have another topic here I want to get into. It's a preview of all the new upcoming Star Trek CBS shows. Is an entire running list of all the new announcements. I figured now that we kind of have a clear picture from Alex Kurtzman, we can kind of get into each one step by step. But first, Dave, Hollywood Reporter is getting into the swing of things, you know, getting into that Picard kick, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they released an article, Star Trek The Next Generation, the 25 best episodes. Let's go through this list briefly, really fast.
Okay.
And see if we agree with these or not. And we'll skip the ones that we don't remember. Okay. Now, number one on their list, I believe it. What order are they going in here? Hold on. In honor of the 25th anniversary of Star Trek Next Generation series, they're just putting them all as top 25. I don't think they're actually ranking them, are they?
I hope not, because the first one on there is like, if that's number 25. I'm going to be very upset.
Yeah. Yeah. It better be number one, because I would agree. Now, Encounter at Farpoint, I would agree. Whether it's number 25 or number one, I agree. Because you and I have done a really detailed discussion, not on the episode itself, but on Q, because we started a Q discussion where we break down the importance of Q and what he does for the show.
Yes.
And the very first discussion we did was Encounter at Farpoint. And we focused on Q's importance and what he was trying to say or do, or what the writers were trying to say and do with that character.
Yes.
And as we broke it down, we did something that we've never done before, obviously. And also, we came to the same conclusion. We realized just how genius that pilot was. And the reason why we say that is because a lot of people give the pilot shit.
They do.
A lot of Next Generation fans will give that pilot shit. Encounter at Farpoint is solid.
It sets the tone for TNG.
It is. Yes. And it also starts something that will be, that will govern Picard's journey for the next 7 years.
Yeah. It sets the table for what we're to expect in any TNG story. it's supposed to ask the question whether we're capable of understanding and worthy enough to go out into space.
All right, so let's skip through a few of these. Also on their list, and I do agree with this one, is Deja Q, season 3, episode 13.
Yeah, because that was a good one.
Q's godlike powers were the source of many TNG storylines, but the finest came, according to them, came when said powers were stripped. As the now castrated Q learns the ways of mortals.
Mm-hmm.
It's an opportunity for the crew to exact revenge on their consistent tormentor. The relationship between him and Data, both classmates on the human condition, is delightful, especially when the former gifts the latter with the ability to laugh. I agree. It says a lot about humanity and the gift of humanity. All right. Also on that list is Sarek, season 3, episode 23. Love this episode, Dave. I think you have brought this episode up
many times.
Many times.
Because it's a very important episode to Star Trek canon, connecting everything together.
Yeah, without a doubt. While TNG lacks a Vulcan main character, it takes on the logical race, produces one of its most... It takes on the logical race, which produces one of its best installments. Mark Leonard reprises his role from the original series as Spock's father, Sarek, in the throes of a disease that caused him to lose emotional control. With a trade resolution on the line, Picard volunteers to mind meld to carry the load, resulting in Stewart running the gamut of fury, ecstasy, and despair.
Yeah, the acting of Patrick Stewart in this one was just top notch.
Yeah.
Like, he goes from elation to despair to anger, all in like a brief scene, and it is so powerful. It's very Shakespearean.
Yeah, absolutely. The next one on their list is The Best of Both Worlds. I cannot disagree. Season 3, episode 26, and season 4, episode 1. I believe we discussed this as a part of our Borg discussion, right?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, this episode is amazing, Dave, and what it does for the growth of Picard. But not only Picard, Riker. And let me get to that in a second. This is the episode, in my opinion, where the writers completely understood what they wanted to do with Captain Picard. This would be his moment that would... This was the catalyst that would set Picard on a path to becoming the character we would see all the way up to Nemesis.
Yeah.
It would create the emotions. It would create the internal conflict that would feed and fuel numerous iterations of episodes, as well as several of our movies. So I cannot disagree with that. Would you agree?
Oh, I agree. I agree, because we've discussed about that episode in length in many shows, and the importance of that episode. It was a great cap off to basically Encounter a Far Point.
Yeah. And another thing that it did well was for Riker himself. And I know I might piss some people off and ruffle some feathers here, but I think up to this point, Riker kind of just drifted. They wanted to create this William Shatner, Captain Kirk-esque character, the womanizer, if you will.
Yeah.
And they did that for about a good season and a half, and he just came off creepy. He was this guy that would just oogle women. And it wasn't like suave, like Captain Kirk was. And eventually they found it. They found what they wanted to do with him. And he still was a ladies' man. And he became less creepy and more natural with it. He was more of a ladies' man. But what this did for his character, rather than just being that guy in the background, you know, the swashbuckling type character in the background, he also started... They started to find and flesh out his story as well. And it came down to the captaincy.
Yeah.
And whether or not he was ready. And if he was willing to leave behind this crew.
Yeah, if he wanted it.
If he wanted it. And what was his reasons? They posed those questions. What was the reasons behind him refusing to become a captain? And we learn about that. And it just said so much about him and where he's at. And they use those moments throughout the next 4 years of Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
So, very, very good episode. It's just, it's where the writers understood where they were taking many of our characters.
Yeah. And the one thing that also going through this list, one of the ones that I think we haven't touched on a lot, but it we kind of tiptoed at it. One of my favorite episodes that they did bring up was Chain of Command. Chain of Command dealt with the art of war. It had the Cardassians. You dealt with like terrorism. And then you had the very famous scene. There are four lights and in that scene. And that episode has always not just stuck with me, but haunted me. Because like the one scene where the Cardassian interrogator brings in the food to Picard. And Picard's been starving this whole point because they're trying to break him. And you look at the food, that still sticks to me. And it's so disgusting when Picard just like devours that almost like disgusting jelly egg-like thing in front of him.
Yeah.
And like he's starving. And the Cardassians just, it always stuck with me that scene because it's like, this is what the ugly side of war. This is what people do. This is reality, you know, and it was during a time when basically people questioned military authorized military, like interrogation tactics, waterboarding. And this episode, when I saw this, I'm going, they can't be really doing this in the real world. But then the behind the scenes, you find out, the whole reason they did this episode was to actually showcase the art of war. This is what they do. They want to break you down. That's what the opposition does. And that's what happens in war.
Yeah.
And I'm like going, damn, that episode still to this day still haunts me.
Yeah, it's a very good episode. All right, Dave, let's move on to our final topic, Star Trek TV preview, all new and upcoming CBS shows. We're going to go through this very quickly, unfortunately, because we're running out of time. Here's a guide to the many and various Star Trek spinoffs and new TV shows CBS is sending our way, according to denofgeek.com. All right, here we go. Star Trek Discovery Season 3. Usually as a TV series heads into season 3, audiences feel like they have a handle on what the show is. There may have been a dramatic season finale. By and large, 2 years viewing have given people some idea what to expect. Star Trek Discovery has completely thrown out the rule book on that front. We have some idea who the regular cast will be, but we don't know who the captain will be, what enemies they will be facing, whether the show will start a new season long arc plot or even exactly in what year the series will be taking place. Well, we do know what year it is. Come on, Den of Geek, get your shit together.
Yeah.
We know. But yeah, Star Trek Discovery, I do agree with them. With that, we don't know what
to
expect.
We don't know what to expect.
And I don't know if I need to know. I think it's fantastic that we have no idea. We know what to expect from the crew, and that's enough. We know who our heroes are. We know who we're supposed to follow. That's all we need to know. We know our characters.
Although my own fan baby thing that I just want, please just make Saru captain. Just make him captain.
Yeah, I feel like they will eventually. All right, next is Short Treks, and I was happy to find this out. I did not think it would come back for another round. Thankfully, it is. It will be coming back later in 2000, expected before the end of 2019. So just like they did with the first round of Short Treks. Next is, of course, Star Trek Picard. If Picard stays on schedule, it will be the first Star Trek series to take viewers into the future of the Prime Universe, not only going beyond the most recent Next Generation adventure, which was Star Trek Nemesis, but including the collapse of the Romulan Empire seen in flash forward in J.J. Abrams' Star Trek, which, unlike most Star Trek stories, follows the branching timelines theory of time, time travel seen recently in Avengers Endgame, except it handled it a whole lot better, whereas Endgame just didn't give a shit. Fuck yourself, Endgame. What's most exciting about it, though, is, of course, the return of one of the series' most beloved captains. Yes, thank you, thank you, thank you. Section 31 series starring Michelle Yeoh, a.k.a. my future wife. This spinoff from Star Trek Discovery is in development but won't enter into production for some time, so we shouldn't expect to see it for a while. Well, you and I discussed that. Currently, Michelle Yeoh's character, Georgiou, is in the future.
Yeah.
With Star Trek Discovery. So she's got to get back somehow before they can officially get into the series. But I am expecting Ash Tyler to also be involved in that series, especially with how they left it off at the end of season two of Discovery.
Yeah. The one thing I wanted to ask you is, would you be good if they started Section 31 without Georgiou and it was just focused on Ash first and then Georgiou comes back?
I would be okay with that, but I don't think they're going to do that. But I would be okay with that because Ash Tyler ended up becoming a very strong and interesting character by the end of season two. Star Trek Lower Decks, named for an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. This animated series is being developed by, among other people, the head writer of Rick and Morty. Thank God. That's so fucking awesome.
Yes.
With a concept that sounds a lot like Red Dwarf, it's a comedy series following the support crew on one of Starfleet's least important ships. Two animated short treks will be released before this series is ready. That's new information. But it will represent the first full animated Star Trek series since Star Trek The Animated Series short run in 1973. Originally considered canon until it was usurped and its continuity contradicted by the movies. That's what I did like about the animated series as well.
Yeah.
It was cool.
It was cool.
Now we also have the untitled animated series. Star Trek animated series are like buses. You wait 4 to 5 years for one. And three comes along all at once. In addition to the animated short treks and Star Trek Lower Decks, CBS is teaming up with Nickelodeon to produce another animated Star Trek series, but this time aimed at children. I'm okay with that as well. Let's do it.
Yeah, because we've discussed about this in the past, is like Star Trek has to reconnect with the audience, but it has to reconnect with a newer audience. Not just its already established audience, but it needs to bring in a young core audience too, much like what the opposition that shall not be named has done over at Disney, the House of Mouse.
Yeah.
But I'm actually really excited for this particular one. The Rick and Morty one sounds great, but this one that's coming from Nickelodeon could be really cool. And they could actually be, it could be their answer to Clone Wars.
Yeah, and the release date is expected in 2020 or 2021. Mm-hmm. So we can look forward to that very soon. Next is a project you and I have talked about time and time again throughout the last few years in our Patreon discussions, Star Trek CD Alpha 5. This one has been stuck in development hell for a very long time. Basically, it's a series all about Khan.
Yep.
And it could be awesome. It was written by the director of Star Trek The Wrath of Khan. And was pitched before Discovery got picked up. So there's a lot of people out there crossing their fingers that this still could happen. I think in this day and era, Dave, we don't always need a TV series, though, or even a movie. We could always do a limited series, a 4-part series, if you will, or do a made-for-CBS all-access film. We can get it done.
Yeah.
Let's get it done, CBS. Next is Star Trek Starfleet Academy. I'm not too excited about this. There's not a lot of information on this, and this has been more speculation than anything else.
Yeah.
Star Trek Starfleet Academy was one of the titles trademarked by CBS in late 2018. And as early as June 2018, it was suggested that the creators of Gossip Girl would be running it. There have been rumors about a new series set at Starfleet Academy every time any new Star Trek series or film has been in development, from Voyager to Enterprise. You know what? I would like to see this happen by the Gossip Girls.
Would you?
Writers. And the reason why is because we need to breathe life into Star Trek. If this franchise, I say this all the time, if this franchise is to survive, we need to saturate various demographics. We have the cartoons, we have the TV shows, and now we can get this one that's maybe more directed at the teeny audience, the 13 to 22 audience. And if that works and connects, then suddenly we have now brought in a new demographic that usually may not pay attention to Star Trek. Now suddenly they're like, you know what? I really dig that Starfleet Academy show. You know, I'm going to go check out what else is going on in the world of Star Trek.
The only problem I had with the idea, because this has been an idea going on for a very long time with Starfleet Academy, is it's always been from my feeling about the Star Trek history, Starfleet Academy sounds really boring. I mean, like,
you're boring, David.
I mean, every time that TNG or even the original series touched on life in Starfleet Academy, it wasn't really exciting. It only became exciting when we saw it in the reboot, where we got to see kind of like the earlier days of Kirk and Spock and their testing facilities and stuff like that. And I'm not sure, like, a series that basically you wouldn't see them go a lot into space. That would be the one thing that I'd be kind of wary of, because I could see a lot of fans going, so you're telling me you're doing a Star Trek show that completely takes place on Earth and never goes out in space.
Yeah. Mm.
And remember, in Star Trek history, DS9 got a lot of flack for not, you know, yeah, traveling.
Yeah, but look at Deep Space Nine. It ended up being...
That's the flip side, is like, it could be, if it's as good as DS9...
It just challenges the writers to be more creative. Writers. That's all. All right, Dave. Well, that concludes our discussion this week. I want to thank everybody for listening to us go on and on and on and ramble about Star Trek. If you miss any part of this broadcast because you're tuning in on our live channel, RM Channel 001, during Geek Out Saturday, you can find us on demand on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Just search Star Trek From the Holodeck. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Let's live long and prosper.
I couldn't help but notice your pain.
My pain?
It runs deep. Share it with me.
End simulation.